In the back of the van were three more dead bodies, two girls and a boy, and their blood was all over the seats and the ceiling of the van. I wanted to move away from what I was seeing, but couldn't. My feet went numb and my entire body froze. Later, we learned that the man had tried to escape with his family and the rebels had shot at his vehicle, killing all his family. The only thing that consoled him, for a few seconds at least, was when the woman who had embraced him and now cried with him told him that at least he would have the chance to bury them. He would always know where they were laid to rest, she said. She seemed to know a little more about war than the rest of us. The wind had stopped moving, and daylight seemed to be quickly giving into night. As sunset neared, more people passed through the village. One man carried his dead son. He thought the boy was still alive. The father was covered with his son's blood, and as he ran, he kept saying, "I will get you to the hospital, my boy, and everything will be fine." Perhaps it was necessary that he cling to false hopes, since they kept him running away from harm. A group of men and women who had been pierced by stray bullets came running next. The skin that hung down from their bodies still contained fresh blood. Some of them didn't notice they were wounded until they stopped and people pointed to their wounds. Some fainted or vomited. I felt nauseated and my head was spinning. I felt the ground moving and people's voices seemed to be far removed from where I stood, trembling. The last casualty that we saw that evening was a woman who carried her baby on her back. Blood was running down her dress and dripping behind her, making a trail. Her child had been shot dead as she ran for her life. Luckily for her, the bullet didn't go through the baby's body. When she stopped at where we stood, she sat on the ground and removed her child. It was a girl, and her eyes were still open, with an interrupted innocent smile on her face. The bullets could be seen sticking out just a little bit in the baby's body, and she was swelling. The mother clung to her child and rocked her. She was in too much pain and shock to shed tears. Junior, Talue, and I looked at each other and knew that we must return to Matrujong because we had seen that Mogbemo was no longer a place to call home and that our parents couldn't possibly be there anymore. Some of the wounded people kept saying that Kabati was next on the rebels' list. We didn't want to be there when the rebels arrived. Even those who couldn't walk very well did their best to keep moving away from Kabati. The image of that woman and her baby plagued my mind as we walked back to Matrujong. I barely noticed the journey, and when I drank water, I didn't feel any relief even though I knew I was thirsty. I didn't want to go back to where that woman was from. It was clear in the eyes of the baby that all had been lost. "You were negative 19 years old." That's what my father used to say when I would ask about what life was like in Sierra Leone following independence in 1961. It had been a British colony since 1808. Sir Milton Magai became the first prime minister and ruled the country under the Sierra Leone People's Party, SLPP, political banner until his death in 1964. His half-brother Sir Albert Magai succeeded him until 1967 when Shaka Stevens, the All People's Congress, APC, party leader, won the election, which was followed by a military coup. Shaka Stevens returned to power in 1968 and several years later declared the country a one-party state, the APC being the sole legal party. It was the beginning of rotten politics, as my father would put it. I wondered what he would say about the war that I was now running from. I had heard from adults that this was a revolutionary war, a liberation of the people from corrupt government. But what kind of liberation movement shoots innocent civilians, children, that little girl? There wasn't anyone to answer these questions, and my head felt heavy with the images that it contained. As we walked, I became afraid of the road, the mountains in the distance, and the bushes on either side. We arrived in Matrujong late that night. Junior and Talue explained to our friends what we had seen, while I stayed quiet, still trying to decide whether what I had seen was real. That night, when I finally managed to drift off, I dreamt that I was shot in my side, and people ran past me without helping, as they were all running for their lives. I tried to crawl to safety in the bushes, but from out of nowhere there was someone standing on top of me with a gun. I couldn't make out his face as the sun was against it. That person pointed the gun at the place where I had been shot and pulled the trigger. I woke up and hesitantly touched my side. I became afraid, since I could no longer tell the difference between dream and reality.